Voices of the Temple, official podcast of the Temple of Witchcraft, exploring mystery and magic through love, will, and wisdom, hosted by Adam Sartwell.
All right. Hi, listeners. Let's just, before I get into who I'm talking to today, let us get into our sacred space together. So take a deep breath. As we call to the Great Spirit, we call to the two who move as one, through the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. I call upon the goddess, the maiden, the mother, and crone, past, present, and future, creator, sustainer, and destroyer, weaver of the web. I call to the god, lord of light and lord of shadow, god of the green and the gold, god of the horn and the red, singer of the song. Be with us now and forever, so mote it be.
So mote it be.
Yay. So, listeners, I'm here with the wonderful Matt Oren. And we're just going to jump into all of my questions, because I think a lot of the people at the temple kind of know who you are, and my listeners do. But how do you spiritually identify yourself?
Fluid. No. Witch. Witch is the word that I always come back to. I always see myself as kind of witch plus, but I see witch as a very like nebulous term that can incorporate a lot of other spiritual and magical practices. It's very much a magpie path.
It catches a lot of things. If you were going to identify some of your pluses, what would they be?
So I'm very into hermeticism and alchemy. I am part of things I'm not supposed to speak about, but more on the Western, like, esoteric stream of things.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I know, this year our, Temple Fest, celebration thing is got a theme of alchemy. So, we'll see how that goes. I know I've been working on some spigeric tinctures for the temple, to help with magical impact and all of that for this year. And they're going to be at Temple Fest. So,
That's awesome.
So you have your own podcast. So I want our listeners to be able to hear a little bit about that so they can find it and know what they're getting into if they get into your podcast. So what's it about?
Yeah, so my podcast is called The Circle Is Podcast, and I co-host that with Rachel True, who she's probably most known to our listeners as Rochelle from the movie The Craft, but she's been in other big movies like Half-Baked and shows like that. And we met in Salem because she was doing tarot readings, and I found out about it in March, and I was like, ooh, early birthday gift. I'm going to give myself something. So I went and I got a reading from her, which was nice because I think most readers in Salem knew who I was. And sometimes it's nice to get a reading from someone who has no idea who you are. So I got a reading from her, and it was super accurate. And we really vibed. So we became friends online. And then she released a tarot book and deck set, which is really great, the True Heart Intuitive Tarot. And then she randomly told me, she's like, hey, do you want to do a podcast? Because we would do lives just chatting and people would enjoy it. So we decided to make a podcast, The Circle Is Podcast, which is a lame pun that I'm very proud of coming up with. And so it's spirituality focused, but it's not solely spirituality focused. It's very life and culture oriented. So, but it always does kind of come back to spirituality, because Rachel is a very spiritual person. She's also a very magical person. She doesn't publicly identify with the word witch, but in my opinion, she's a witch. So we have guests on that we think will have something interesting to say from different paths. So We don't just like bring on like authors and teachers of like tarot and witchcraft and stuff, but we also like to bring on like musicians and actors and actresses and sort of get their take on what they're doing in spirituality. So it's not like a deep esoteric dive. We try to keep it very light, very conversational, and very fun, and we are having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I'm sure our listeners would love to check it out. So you are coming to Templefest. So what are you teaching at Templefest?
Okay, so I'm teaching two classes. So the first one is tarot spirit guides and the angel of the tarot. And then the second one is more hands-on. So that one's more kind of like a lecture with a little bit of like meditation. The second one is more hands-on. It's scrying the tarot, which is a technique. So both of these classes are based on my book that'll be released right after Templefest, which is The Psychic Art of Tarot. So the scrying classes is really fun. Essentially, you scry into the cards that you pull, like just like you would like a crystal ball or a black mirror or anything like that. And it's really interesting to see sort of what happens and what kind of comes through and changes. And it's a great way to get out of that box that I think a lot of tarot readers can get stuck in, which is keywords and sort of like rote memory and association and correspondences. So it gets you a little bit out of the left brain and a little bit more into that right brain, into that intuitive psychic faculty. And I'm a big advocate of not throwing away those traditional meanings and associations, but I see it more as sort of like a foundation, which a whole lot more can be built upon.
That's awesome. And I do find that, like, when you're reading tarot, sometimes a new association will pop up as you're reading, if you are open to it, which I think
Absolutely.
is really helpful.
Absolutely. And I also find that like I like to kind of switch decks up because I find like the same card in a different deck will have a totally different message and vibe.
And I think there's also the addition of the artist who made it. Like,
Yes.
they can have a very different view. I remember the Ecstatic Tarot, I think it was called, and they had the Five of Cups, but it was this person dancing in the fact that the like cups were some of the cups were spilled, and I was like, that's interesting, and I wouldn't take that as, the meaning of this card, but it was really very interesting to look at.
That is interesting. I mean, I can kind of see it. But yeah, that does stray a little bit from the
The
traditional.
classical meaning,
But it does seem more optimistic, which is cool.
true, yes. So now you have written two best-selling books for Llewellyn Publishing. Can you tell us about those, and then I guess about your new upcoming book? Tell us about those.
So Psychic Witch is my first baby. I actually wrote that while I was still living in Massachusetts, and it's sort of my love letter to all my influences on my path and sort of the things that I developed on my own based on that. I had a lot of great teachers like Christopher in the Temple and Laurie Cabot and Devin Hunter and Storm Fairy Wolf. So I kind of started blending a lot of those techniques, and a lot of them sort of evolved into my own personal thing, which I advocate a lot, in my books. I'm always like, I try to tell the reader to take the approach that I try to take when learning, or studying under someone, which is like, pretend you know nothing, do it just as you're taught. And then later, once you have that established and it's over, make it your own, like make it work for you and how you resonate. So I guess it's kind of more like learn the science of magic and then later apply your art to it, once you've got it figured out. But Psychic Witch was based on my idea that like psychic ability and magic are two sides of the same coin, which I still do believe that's true. One is about like the reception of energy, like the receiving it, processing it, and then the other is about like exerting that, projecting it, and manipulating it to create change. But I do feel that it is all the same subtle energy. And I do believe that they can kind of create a like a conduit or a circle or circuit where they empower one another. So your psychic ability can enhance your magic, and your magic can enhance your psychic ability. So that's the first book. This and that one had no tools. Like there's one exercise where you need like a wine glass. I think that's the only one. And so the second book was about the other side. So now that you have this down, like how do you work with tools? How do you kind of explore different types of sacred space aside from the magic circle, and why would you use them? I also wanted to make it sort of a community thing. So I asked a lot of magical practitioners that I respected, you and Christopher included. I was very grateful that you contributed to sort of show me and the readers a glimpse of your magic, something magical. So it's not just like, you know, just Matt Oren's way. We get to kind of sample other people's way from different streams of witchcraft and magical practices that don't necessarily call themselves witches. So yeah, that is my second book. And then recently came out with Pisces Witch with Ivo Dominguez Jr., which I had to fight for with my editor because the psychic tarot book was coming out. And she was worried about deadlines. And I was like, you don't understand. I need to co-author this book. Like, I want to work with Ivo. Like, I am a Pisces witch. Pisces is all about the psychic witch stuff. So, like, give it to me. And so she talked to Ivo. And Ivo was like, yeah, have Matt. So I had a lot of fun with that one. Because after mastering magic, I had, like, really strong burnout in both writing and teaching and just promoting and all of that stuff. And Pisces Witch made writing fun again for me, which was really, really important and helped spark the new book that's coming out, which is The Psychic Art of Tarot. So The Psychic Art of Tarot is very much the book I always wanted in my path in tarot, you know, because there's plenty of great books out there on tarot and various aspects of it. And, you know, there's some good books out there on psychic ability, but there's not a lot of books that blend them together. The only one I can think of is one, and it still didn't give me what I wanted fully. And usually those sort of psychic tarot books tend to be more intuitive, which I define differently. So I wanted to kind of show, like, what are the things that I developed in my practice, particularly reading in Salem in my private tarot practice, where I began blending all of my psychic training with the tarot readings. And that really, really amplified my readings. And I became a fairly popular and in-demand reader because of these things. And I used to kind of like keep these techniques like close to my chest, because they were like my trade secrets, right? Like this is how I was supporting myself through tarot. But now that I am not professionally reading anymore, and I'm more about like teaching a person how to fish, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give it out to the world. And hopefully like it'll really elevate people's practices.
That's awesome. Now, since these books are pretty much done, is there something that you're working on now that you want to share about?
So right now I'm kind of in a weird liminal mode. So like I have several book ideas and sort of bits that I've started. But my main focus right now is teaching, because I have a lot of workshops coming up this year, including Temple Fest and my Omega retreat. And then next year is so booked with events that like I don't know if I'll be writing. It's one of those things where I'm always like, I always tell myself I'm going to write on the plane, right? So like whatever I tell myself I'm going to do on an airplane, I never do. So if I'm like, I'm just going to sleep on this flight, like I never sleep. So yeah, I don't know when the next book coming out is. I'm hoping to take 2026 kind of off in general from like teaching and speaking and stuff like that. So I can focus on these writing projects that like, are just like bubbling. And, as Laura Tempest Zachroff says, the muses are slutty. So like whenever you don't act on an idea that the muses give you, they end up giving it to someone else, which is fine. It gets out into the world, but there's some that I really want to put out there. And it's sort of like what I've been slowly building the Psychic Witch series to, but I wanted to like get people to that point. So even in my first two books, there's not really a focus on working with deity or working with spirits outside of your spirit guides. And one of the books is like building to that and then building deeper and beyond. So like I don't want to give too much away, but I have ideas, but nothing in terms of like actively working on at the moment.
Well, we will have to wait with bated breath and see what you do. So as a practitioner, how has your spirituality changed over the years?
Oh, it's changed so much. So, my spiritual practice, particularly my witchcraft practice, has been a winding road. Well, I guess the better term is it's been a crooked path, right? So like I was really into witchcraft when I was a child. I was like super into it. Like it, I credit it for saving me from an abusive situation, which I opened my second book with to just explain like why I'm passionate about it. As I got older, I kind of started straying into other things, dabbling into different modalities. In high school, I got super into like Anton LaVey's work when I was going through like my goth nihilist phase, And then after that, I got really into like more new age practices and then more shamanistic practices and healing modalities. And then when I was living in Massachusetts, I because like for the couple years before that, so in my 20s, I started astral projecting spontaneously and I started making contact with a spirit that would come in the form of an owl. And I feel like that was a big part of leading me to Massachusetts. So I was in Massachusetts and I was reading a book. And I was telling my partner at the time, Rory, about it, because I was like, oh, this book has the experiences that I had that I've never read anywhere. And it was the Shamanic Temple of Witchcraft. And he's like, oh, that's, yeah, Christopher lives around here somewhere. He's local. And it's like, what? Are you serious? So we Googled Christopher and found the temple and went to an open house and we're like, we love this. And then found out about Temple Fest, went to Temple Fest and was like, I love these people. Like, this is an amazing community. And then so like I then immersed myself even deeper into witchcraft. And I feel that the gift that the temple, particularly Christopher's work really gave me was it gave me a new depth to witchcraft that I didn't know was there. And I think is part of why I moved on from it, because a lot of the, as you know, a lot of the 90s books don't have a lot of depth to them, that were coming out. So, yeah, and I mean, my path is constantly like I'm constantly learning and growing and changing my opinion on things. So even like my Pathos blog, like I'm kind of embarrassed of it. Like it was super popular, but there's a lot of opinions and ideas that I'm like, yeah, I just don't like that's not how I view things anymore. That, just kind of based on experience.
Voices of the Temple is brought to you by our many wonderful sponsors for the Temple of Witchcraft Community Center Fund, including our anonymous and monthly contributors. Special thanks to the Robin's Nest, a metaphysical community in all ways for always. Located in Bellingham, Massachusetts, the Robin's Nest offers a wide selection of magical tools, divination decks, books, crystals, incense, herbs, oils, teas, and candles for all of your spiritual and magical needs. The Nest also offers up a wide range of services, including psychic readings, rituals, and classes. Shop online at therobinsnestma.com or come to visit in person and be greeted by the sounds of running water, tinkling chimes, and laughing voices as you step into the magical realm. If you would like to become a sponsor for Voices of the Temple and contribute to the Temple of Witchcraft Community Center Fund, please contact Debbie Stellhorn at Debbie, and that's an IE, Stellhorn at templeofwitchcraft.org. Or look for more information at our website at templeofwitchcraft.org.
Yeah. I don't know if that answered your question or if I'm just kind of ranting.
Yeah, no, I think that gives, I sort of asked that question because I feel like sometimes people limit themselves by thinking that they're always going to be one thing for the rest of their life. Like, you know, when people are like, I'm a crystal witch and, you know, they, you know, like declare it. And I'm like, oh, that's part of my craft, but it's not the whole and sum of my craft.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And like, I think, you know, because when my book came out, there was, you know, green witchcraft and like these different things like kitchen witch. And like, people started using psychic witch in that manner. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I didn't even see it like that. Like for me, it was just kind of an open term. That's mm-hmm. just like psychic and witch, you know? So I think I am poly to the core. So like I'm poly in my relationships, I'm poly with my gods and my spirits, and I'm also poly with my practices, but I feel like witchcraft is my home base and mm-hmm. psychic practices are my home base. So I'm always returning to that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's good for people to hear that and your own story with time, you know, because I think that as they go through their own spiritual path, they're mm-hmm. going to wind, they're going to change, they're going to move, they're going to experience new things. And being open to that is really potent.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. it's interesting because just kind of observing others in the community, especially like newer people, I see them going through a lot of the phases that I went through, mm-hmm. You know, including like feeling like you figured it all out, you know, to like going into your hardcore like tradcraft phase and your hardcore like folk magic phase. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's really interesting to watch and it gives me sort of a different perspective, but also sort of a compassion for that, like watching that and like understanding like, okay, this is part of the path. But the thing that like bugs me to no end is hot takes on witchcraft, especially because they tend to be wrong. They tend to, not that like the person is wrong, but like the basis of their opinion is very short-sighted and uninformed. Mm-hmm. And they seem to present it as if,
yeah,
you know, it is informed. And like, I was guilty of that as well. And just, you know, I've kind of gotten to this point where I've also kind of gone more inward with a lot of my practices and my experiences. Cause there was a time when like, anytime I had a spiritual experience or anytime I had an opinion on something, it's like, I had to blurt it out to the internet. And now it's just sort of like, I don't need to have an opinion on everything. I don't need to share everything. Not everything needs to be or should be shared. Mm-hmm. And not everything, I don't think everyone should have an opinion on everything. One of the biggest, I think, lessons, gifts that I got from Christopher was his yes and. And just kind of approaching things of yes and not seeing things as yes and no or this or that, but sort of that more like paradox of things can be contradictory but equally true. And I mm-hmm. think that has kind of served me very well.
Yeah. So I guess that sort of brings us to what is the best advice that you've been given or have come up with that you think would be helpful to the community?
Ooh, that's such a tough one. Community is beautiful and difficult at the same time. And one of my observations is a lot of times I see people like rant about community and put it in quotation marks and be like, there is no community, just because it's not like lovey-dovey, like commune. I'm coming over with like a pie because you're sick, you know. Community is difficult. Like, I mean, that's intrinsic in any sort of social dynamic, and that doesn't make it not community. I've learned a lot from, so what would be advice? I guess I'm struggling on like what would be the advice that is given. Because a lot of what I learned was from observing someone that I'm not going to name as a bad example of what not to do in community, by their example of doing it in community, and just like telling myself, I will never be that, I will never do that. I've also gotten in a weird position because you know, my work has become so popular. And I often forget like how popular it is, or that people put me on the stupid like pedestal that people do, for good or bad. But I've experienced a lot of like seeing or overhearing or having like gossip or like rumors passed on to me of things that are just like absolutely like not true or based in reality. And then it's given me sort of a perspective of looking at when this happens to other people, you know, and just sort of trying to weigh like what's being said versus like, well, what is my experience with that person? Like, you know, not necessarily going for the believing the horrible thing I've heard about that person, and just kind of giving like a gracious sort of space for that. But in terms of advice, I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I well, if I can recap what you're saying or try to paraphrase it, I think what you're saying is that people are human, and the things that are sometimes said about people are not true. So you have to sort of observe safely that person and see where you feel like you can trust them. Does that make sense?
And also learning more about like who's saying it and like, you know, putting that in as
Who's
a
brought it to you, and can you really believe that?
And you know, like, so it's just kind of keeping an open mind about it, but like I do take the mental note of like also like is it actually problematic and harmful for other people and community, or is it just more someone's petty interpersonal problem or projection or whatever? You know, because I've even like even people I'm very close to, like I've seen this happen to them where it's just absolutely not true. And people, yeah, it goes back to that like big name pagan thing, which I hate. I hate. And I sort of blame the generations a couple back for sort of setting that up. But I kind of get it. Like we don't have religious leaders in the sense of like popes or like Dalai Lama, you know, and we put authors as sort of like this elevated thing. When I think people forget that authors are also human. And most authors that I know, like, will quickly admit, like, no, I don't know at all. Like, I'm not, you know, the Pope of witchcraft, you know, like, most of us are still learning and we're just kind of sharing, like, what we've learned and what has helped us on the way.
And
But yes, humanness.
there are, and people come up with the funniest things,
The
like
weirdest
weird
things.
rumors and things like that. Like, one that we heard recently that was, well, Christopher can do whatever he wants and write and whatever, because Adam and Steve earn so much that they've funded it all, which is So not true.
Yeah.
like it just amazed me. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, what? People come
Yeah.
up with things and they start seeing things and then making assumptions
Yeah,
and
I think the weirdest one is like that I've come across is certain individuals, and this has happened more than once, are convinced that I'm like obsessively hating them and working to ruin their careers. When, like, no offense to them, but I'm not thinking about them. Like, I don't have time to do that. That's such a waste of time and energy. Like, when I can be putting that into creating and teaching, you know? And I think that, like, perhaps individuals like that, if they did put that energy into teaching and writing and those sort of things, they wouldn't feel like someone is secretly trying to sabotage their career.
And the hard part is, if they really dig deep and look, it's themselves that's destroying their career and all of that, by not observing their own patterns. At least that is what I have observed.
Absolutely. And I think people also forget, especially on social media. I'll sometimes see peers like go on the deep end and rant about people or whatever. And I'm like, not only does that look bad, right? But like, bookstores owners, book store owners see that, event organizers see that, your peers see that, like, you're just not doing yourself any favors. And I early on in any of my work, publicly, like all the way back to Bathyas, like I made the agreement with myself that I would never tear someone down. If I didn't like their work, if I didn't like the book, or whatever, I just wouldn't mention it. And I would use that energy to focus on like the work that I did like and the people that I did think were doing good work for the community. But that also goes into like my really like new agey, new thoughty kind of side of myself, of like keeping it high vibe versus, tearing people down. I think people get lost a little bit in this idea that like their books, their teachings, their works is about them. And there's this sort of rat race slash crabs in a bucket mentality. But I always just try to approach it as, like this is the work we're doing is not about us individually. Like, yes, we're presenting it. Yes, we're putting it out into the world. But like, if you're putting it out for yourself and like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure like you agree with me and, this is kind of a pointless rant, but it's surprisingly, I see it a lot. And I think that is one of the biggest pitfalls on this path. Particularly because I do genuinely believe that witchcraft itself is a spirit in the animist sense of the word. And I think when people make work that is meant to be for other people really about themselves, that that's when that spirit may not necessarily be helping you kind of move along. And it's been really interesting, particularly with the pandemic that we went through when we had this rise of like TikTokers becoming authors, like social media, like influencers on witchcraft. And most of them are gone now. Most of them have completely disappeared. And I'm sure there's many factors to that, but part of it is I do believe that like witchcraft is a spirit and it's not going to keep you on the path of like putting messages out there if
I like to quote Raven Grimasi of "The ways have ways, and
I
those who
love
are not supposed to be on the way will lose their way." Does that make
yeah
sense?
that's
Like, yeah,
perfect yes
I was like, yeah, I've said it multiple times to my students because when we start Witchcraft One, we have like 15 people, and
yeah
then by Witchcraft Two, there's maybe five.
I experienced that, yes.
So you have to, also have that non-attachment of like, I'm putting this out, but this is what my spirit has told me that I need to like give to the community, and trusting that that is, what's meant to
Yeah,
be.
and one of the things that I was talking about, Evo, is I try to be really, really good with citing my sources and where I got something. And it's funny because my Llewellyn editor, one of my editors, the first thing was like, "You're name dropping too much." And I was like, "I'm literally saying I learned this technique from Laurie Cabot, and this is how I do it." Like, I'm giving credit. So they were like, "That's cool." But I was talking to Ivo about how, like, there's certain things that you know are yours, certain ideas or certain practices or things like that. And I and him, and I'm sure many other people, I'm sure Christopher sees it all the time. We'll see certain things of ours that we know are uniquely ours in other people's books without credit or even being in the bibliography. And it doesn't really upset me that much. Like, one, it sucks not to get credit, but for me, like, I feel like it's still getting out there, and that's good. And if someone's going to plagiarize me, I much rather it be a human than like an AI, like Marie Silva on Amazon.
I feel like too, because witchcraft is a spirit, sometimes some people will come up with the same approach and some with slight variations without even being contacted by the book or your work. Because
I think that's very true. I was talking to Damien Eccles about this because I wrote Psychic Witch before I read any of his books. And I was recently listening to one of his like only on Audible type courses. And he has exercises that like the I forgot which ones they were specifically, but I was like, oh my God, those are my exercises. So I went and I looked at like the date. And it was like 2 years before Psychic Witch was even written, and I was like, that's so weird that
And that's like the muses are
slutty. Yeah, right.
slutty. So they will bring an idea to multiple people to see, how they're going to like jive with it and create it and
Right.
use
And
it.
that's when it becomes weird. Like I was saying, like, I'm kind of okay with seeing that kind of stuff. Because also, like, how do I, like, if it's not like straight up like plagiarism, I don't own it. Like, I'm not the owner of witchcraft or techniques, it's I think it's a lot more along the lines of what you're saying. Like, spirit is a witch is it, witchcraft is a spirit. The ways have ways. But also, the idea that, it's getting out into the world. And for me, that's more important than like, having my name in a bibliography at the end.
I think it's good that we can have people experience those things and be connected to those things is more important than our own personal work,
Yes.
especially when we're talking about community. This doesn't
Right,
mean
right.
we d can't feel a little slighted every once in a while, but we're human.
For sure. Yeah. And one of the things that I find really interesting is a lot of authors, not all, of course, but like a lot won't credit things because they just kind of assume it's general knowledge, like, but they won't like say where they got something, which for me, I actually find as like, I actually dislike that when I'm reading a book because I always want to know where something comes from. Like, I feel like it gives it a little bit more validity if I know, like, oh, this is something like Dion Fortune said, or like, it just makes it a little bit less in the this is this person's personal gnosis versus, which I'm not against, but versus this idea of it's shared gnosis or it's gnosis that has been passed on.
The one thing that I in books I always am like trepidatious about bringing forward is when I get it from a guide. That's the one I'm just like, do I say my teachers? Do I say my guide gave me this? Like that kind of stuff. And it gets a little mind mushy if you think that you're also like in the oneness, so you're also one with your guide and it's also
Right.
you. And I sometimes will be like, couch it in some sort of term that says I got it from my teachers or things like that.
I've done that, and that was something I picked up from Raven Grimassi, because I know he did that a couple times. Yeah, and I think like with anything like that, like when it comes to magical teachings or personal gnosis or anything like that, like I'm less concerned about like the quote unquote authenticity of it versus does it work? Like I'm always looking for like, does it work? Can I get it to work? Can I get this? Can I recreate it? Can other people recreate it? You know, whether it's my practices or someone else's practices or
And do I have
whatever.
to alter it to make it work for me?
Yes. And I'm a huge advocate of that. But like I said, I'm always of the mind of like when you're learning something, whether it's reading a book for the first time or going through like a course, just kind of having that beginner's mind and pretending that like I don't know anything else about magic, like, and I will do it as I'm being taught. Like for example, the LBRP I tried modifying before I did it the way that it's like taught standardly. And I didn't get that good of results. And then I did the LBRP and I got results, but I still didn't vibe on it on a like a personal soul level. And now I've adapted it now that I've worked with the traditional LBRP like over and over and over. Like I now have something that is mine, that is a variation of that, that is powerful. As opposed to like when I tried to change it before.
You knew what it was about. I
Right,
get it.
right, right. And could feel like, what does the energy feel like when I, vibrate this name and, things of that nature. So, I always try to take that as a lesson of like, do it as it's taught. And then once you get the feel, the understanding, the mechanics down, then work on the art aspect of it to make it resonate with you.
And I know for myself, so before I'd started doing any of the temple books or any of the temple stuff, I had a whole body of knowledge that I had picked up over years and years and years. So when I took the temple tradition, I actually was like trying to really engage with the temp like that mindset of this is, I'm going to experience this like it's all new. And I limited myself to like only working in the way that I was in. So like witchcraft one, I was like, it's all meditation, all psychic stuff. I'm sending light, I'm doing the, like sort of things instead of casting a spell or going on a shamanic journey or, like some of the upper things, just because I felt like if I was completely focused on those things, I would touch on all the bases. And then as I went along, I would, and I do feel like sometimes going through the science of something or the process of something makes you a much more cooked cookie than not going through the process. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and funny enough, I find that similar with tarot readings. And like a lot of tarot readers are like, what? But I always talk about how like when I am receiving a tarot reading, I just pretend I know nothing about the tarot. Because they'll interpret a card completely different than I would. But if I'm fixated on like what I think it means, I'm projecting. It's like, why am I even getting a reading? Because the whole point is to hear what they have to say and what's coming to them. And I think it's very similar with learning magic, as you're saying. Like, one of my pitfalls definitely was, not having that beginner's mind. And I would end up missing things because I would be thinking it's something else instead of just like listening and doing. You just end up missing things just as you would in a tarot reading from someone else.
Because you may see the lovers as an actual loving relationship, and some other person might see it as a choice that you have to
Right.
make. So it has multiple interpretations.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for coming on to the podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you
Thank
for having
listeners
me.
for listening. I think we'll just devoke our space and say goodbye. Does that sound good?
That
All
sounds
right.
great.
So we thank the Great Spirit. We thank the two who move as one. We thank the three rays of love, will, and wisdom. We thank all the spirits and powers that move through us and work with us. May we recognize your presence in our lives. Blessed be. Merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Bye, listeners.
You've been listening to Voices of the Temple. The contents of this podcast are copyright 2010 of the Temple of Witchcraft. For more information, please visit templeofwitchcraft.org.